Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. On the heels of the Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria came a Forest Poets event on Leap Day. It was organized by North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection to highlight the importance of forests in providing a clean water supply. There were readings at Fort George's Level Taproom from several North Coast poets, and we've carved a half hour from the two-hour event for this morning's Human Beat. The poets you'll hear in order are Reba Owen, Jim Dott, Lauren Mallett, Logan Garter, and Dr. Robert Michael Pyle. After the first poet, we'll also hear from Anna Kaufman from the Watershed Protection Group.
Okay, I have five short poems. They go pretty fast. The first one is Duet the Owl. I can ripple the moon and scatter the stars on the surface of the lake. I can duet the owl and the nighthawk, but I'm helpless to ever find you again. Okay, the next one is called The Wild Tree, and this tree exists in the pavement over at the Warrington Shopping Center. The Wild Tree. Shapeless in summer, a few green berries, but fall to winter emerges tangled and backtracing, intersecting with its own branches, a maze of twists and turns from the trunk. In the center of it, nothing could find you or pull you out onto the pavement. You could watch people drive by in the daytime and watch at night as geese fly silently across the moon. Ripit Road. Ripit Road is swampy and was named by numerous frogs who live along its edges. Did they think that that name would prevent pickups with bloodied elk carcasses from spraying gravel on their smooth green heads? Or did the croakers wish to hear the murmur of children repeating and repeating a similar sound that frogs make themselves? Ripit, ripit. The county did not wish to have amphibians naming roads, but the web-footed ones hired an attorney, and they prevailed over Grampson Boulevard. Okay, this Quiet Sunday is a poem I wrote many, many years ago, before global warming really became a household term. On this quiet afternoon, the ocean sounds downtown, though a mile or more away. The Sunday papers say a tidal surge across the globe has flooded once safe bungalows and bay. On the beach, bones of spruce, hemlock, ribs of cedar bleach, where they fell and faded this decade. The air is full of salt, and scientists say none can halt the sinking closer to Atlantis of Bangladesh bird or mantis. In their ken, the fossils of the Mongol desert may swim again. After centuries, black logs nearly peat roll from the eroded banks of Neocony and meet back-to-back comets who portend a date when sharks will hunt the interstate. And then the last one is an imagining. One night, I imagine sitting on the cusp of the new moon and watching the new year approaching the earth below. From that height, there is no destruction, no hatred, no disease, no tears, just the sweet salt of the oceans and the resin of the forests, and the new year humming, ringing, strumming a bel canto of hope. Thank you very much.
Welcome. My name's Anna Kaufman, and I'm the Astoria Coordinator for North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection, or NCCWP. I know it's a bit of a long name. This is our first Astoria chapter event after the branches kickoff last fall, and we're so excited to see you all here and reintroduce ourselves to the community. We are a grassroots citizen group that was founded in 2012 in Rockaway Beach in response to the excessive clear-cutting of the Jetty Creek watershed, which is Rockaway Beach's primary source of surface drinking water. At this point, it's been 90% clear-cut and sprayed aerially with pesticides. And what this means is that pesticides are showing up in their drinking water as are carcinogenic byproducts from the large quantities of chlorine needed for sanitation due to high water turbidity associated with clear cutting. Since NCCWP began, we've been contacted by citizens all up and down the coast experiencing similar issues of logging and spraying in their own drinking watersheds or surrounding their drinking watersheds, including folks in Astoria. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. and so we realized that the water crisis in Rockaway Beach was not happening in a vacuum, but it's actually a coastwide crisis. So we now have over 1,600 members from Lincoln City to Astoria and many supporters in Portland who are not only concerned about the implications of industrial logging on water quality, but also on water quantity. Several peer-reviewed studies have revealed that the deforestation and tree plantations are drivers of summer droughts and fire, as well as winter flood events. So as a group, our mission is to end all logging, pesticide spraying, and slash burning within the drinking watersheds here in Oregon, regardless of land ownership. Thank you. We hope this Forest Poets event will showcase yet another reason why our forests and watersheds are so critical to our health and well-being. In addition to the cool, clean air and water they provide us, these places are special in their beauty, fecundity, and intricacy. They are critical sources of creative inspiration for many of us who live here.
Naming the tree, Douglas fir, Pseudotsuga menziesii, and a quote from David Douglas. Remarkably tall, unusually straight, thickly clad to the very ground, wide-spreading pendant branches, nature's most graceful object. 6:35. First fire, seedlings you will wither in the shade, need flame to open the canopy. Elders must burn and fall. Next mist, rain, thin soil and sun. Some of you will be eaten, others will wither, a few will reach toward the light. Since that burn, some of you assembled 1,400 rings. A few were felled by wind and slides, swept into rivers, washed to sea, where you drift for years. Throughout your range, the original indigenous names that drew the namer toward the heart of you, those names, those who spoke those names, long since sunk in needle duff. Your buds, perfectly formed rusty embers, flare into yellow-green needles each spring. Red alder, Alnus rubra. After a gentle rain, the alder fell across the road. The neighbors, with their chainsaws, bucked up the trunk, cleared one lane. It grew on the uphill side, leaned into the gap above the roadway. Not the largest along this stretch, not the smallest. Its bark no longer the glossy gray-green it was as a sapling. And the road was new, muddy malachite or wetted serpentine, nicked by lenticels, of the color it would become, a smooth, ashen gray, daubed by white lichen, felted by yellow moss. Not a weed, but weed-like. A native pioneer prefers the riverbank, but being a prolific seeder, takes the open ground after a burn or blowdown, a flood, a slide, a clear cut, or a road. Grows fast with enough light and rain, yet we do not marvel at an alder's age or girth or height. For a time, it gives its lead to wood and flat, creek, brook, and grove. As it prepares the way for its own demise, making shade, enriching earth, root nodules, home to bacteria that breathe nitrogen into soil, ensuring success of sprouting cedar, spruce, and Douglas fir. Von Bungard, in his St. Petersburg herbarium, named it Ulnus rubra, from specimens collected in Sitka when Alaska was still on Russia's books. Nuttall called it Oregana, encountered as he birded and botanized through the Oregon country 1834 to 5. Rubra grew in favor, color of winter twigs dye from the inner bark, doubly red, alder roots back to aller, allure to el, a reddish brown hue as in elm and elk. The alder's white living wood, when cut, bleeds to rusty red. It had its time, a middling human length. When winds tried to break it, it only bent. When rain and rain sought to drown it, its roots reached deep and drank. After the county road crew cleared away the rest of it, a sapling hemlock pinned beneath the alder's trunk sprang back, unbroken. Thank you.
Skipping on. This land came first. Later, our compound language for it. Dismal niche. Gearheart, Bay Ocean, Salt Works. The Skipanon River. None are mine, yours, or ours. Though I admit I sang that unfortunate anthem at Disneyland in the late 90s. I didn't know to call my I saw below me solo colonialism. And we're too late in practically every way. Scotch broom usurps the clear cut. Clam season was closed by Damoic acid. A landslide claimed eastbound Highway 30. If anyone can, it's you, our fathers told us. We were young. We were born the eldest daughters. This is 35 on the Oregon coast. August clicks open its seed pod bones. Here, the water of the body is never alone. Today's ship report with Joanne Rideout featured Big Brave carrying wheat and Lisa Marie carrying gypsum. A freighter like that sits low on the Columbia. From the Hammond mooring basin, we watch some move upriver, others out the mouth. Like blessings, we call out their names. We see if we can make out their flags like we are at war. Now to puddle season, which is many seasons. This is small puddle, small puddle. The not yet swarm. The same walk on the same dune trail in the state park that is my neighbor. The dog I sometimes call Bicho Stuvie has pooped twice on this walk, making this a decent day. My other neighbor is an army base, and I catch the tuck-tuck of a tank's pair of endless metal tracks. Murphy and I startle an eagle from a pine or spruce branch. Its wings rustle this hill of beech forest. It's gone off. And so have these mosquitoes, hatched days ago in the puddles, now slurfily bumbling, swooping, looking dumb, mostly at eye level. One falls into me, and I rake it to my lips with my tongue. Its stripes are lovely. They don't yet know the pull to reproduce, that I could be the blood meal they need to do it. This same poem, where nature shows me an order, all I want is to include me. The welt the bite will make, somewhat bound but persisting, the size of a quarter, the color of milk, and I will let it, and I will complain about it. I try to recall the time before hunger, but I don't. All around me, these so many things are buzzing, making a scene. None of them is an invitation to the blood that leads to the eggs, that lead to the water. Yes, the same water.
This poem is called A Lively Meeting of Hydrologists. I'll just let you be the judge of. The room is lined with computers, projectors, printers, each lending a bit of warmth. Electric fans work dry, hot air from their fellow components. Here, men and women speak of bedrock, wells, sensors, all in soft tones. There's no reason to whisper, but mild manners and soft voices prevail for whatever reason. Every agenda item is an apparent secret. It's an introverted bunch. They sit around a large table, slab of wood in a room of metal and polymer. Facing one another, they ignore the machines and the humming and the heat at their backs. They don't care or maybe don't notice, only murmur. And now, amid the quiet whispers and mumbling, describing the search for some obscure piece of equipment on some undisclosed stream, a sensor of some type, the storyteller reveals, it was completely buried under iron oxide precipitates, and the room erupts with the cackles and guffaws of hydrologists. I didn't get it. It was great fodder. I love it now. Astoria is a cathedral town. Container ships faced east with the incoming tide. Great alcoveless churches. There are rose windows watching and biding river time for the second coming, or port of entry to be granted upstream, whichever comes first. Witch's Wood. And this is named after a piece of forest out on Pipeline. I think a lot of people call it the Weird Wood. I like Witch's Wood better. And it's real short. I'll trade you the dreams of a sleeping dog for the first full view of the rising harvest moon. Then we can all twitch happily beneath it. You, the dog, and I, under pale and ghostly light, in dance of one sort or another. Here in the floodplain, where sand dominates the soil, we grow wildflowers and sit on red bricks, spines bent over books, while a pig and some dogs push their noses around our tiny plot of land. The house has been settling too. Cinders slide downward with every 100 passes of truck tons of earth from down the street where the big box store will be. You can roll a marble south to northwest on our kitchen floor, as reliably as you can find the round, desiccated things that have journeyed beneath the refrigerator. The seeds of small hidden projects which threaten to grow into expensive realities of pine and copper and steel and plywood. At 8 feet above the sea and not more than a crow flying mile, we get to feel apart. Right outside the door, when the wind carries a faint drone whispering salt, or when it rains angry, and the tide is in, water table riding high, we sit and look at the moat in the yard. That's when we and a pig and some dogs all cloister ourselves, each in their own space, to nest and burrow and close our eyes for a time. There's a tree restoration project at the bottom of Bear Creek. Before its convergence with the eventuality called Columbia, where beavers decimated the Plumas Sitkoilo stand, left the fir and spruce to greater appetites, like those timber vessels, waiting there for their turn in Longview. An American dipper was mapping Nat Creek on my last visit, electing to fly low along the contours, taking them down rather than making the straight shot from wherever it was she started. I watched squatting while she secreted breaths of morning knowledge beneath riffles in the water, under stones in exchange for caddisfly larvae and river snails and fry. Above us, where the streams are smaller, but before they dilute themselves into 100 creeklets and rivulets, they're watched over by Fern Hill nurseries, non-point sources of duff, where Chanterelle, little sister, sings about quiet ways of being. Thank you, everybody.
The last thing that we should do is to think of forest reform as a battle between loggers and conservationists. That was a terrible error of the worst of the spotted owl era, the poor scapegoat of the spotted owl. People who were deriving short-term profits through bad management were exploiting both the people of the woods and the woods. And in so doing, and using this spotted owl, now the murrelet, marbled murrelet, shamelessly as a scapegoat, instead of as the biologists do, and the conservationists as a presence for all the life, as was evoked, that was shameless. And we mustn't do that, because the loggers, like the fishers who filled this town days ago, the grabbers and others, do the most dangerous and the most difficult and the hardest work in the world to create things that we, after all, use and require. Look at what's above us that Tim evoked, these beams. Barry Lopez spoke of our books as being published on the flesh of the trees. The loggers are not our enemies. They are people that we send forth into the world to bring fiber back for us in many forms that we use too. It's a question of how is it done? How is it done? And that's, I think, what your group is finding a new way to look at. This is called, from my book, The Evolution of the Genus Iris, this is called 3 a.m. at the All-Night Logging Show. Well, okay, not really all night, but this operation starts up around 2 in the morning, shuts down early. We're used to logging around here. The ragged little mountain these guys are relieving of its alder has been logged before. The next patch over will go next year. The hill across the creek, last cut before I came here in 78, will be felled again in 10 or 15 years, I guess, for pulp, this stuff I'm writing on. Loggers always go to work early, stepping into their clammy, stagged-off jeans about the time I turn in some nights. It's not unusual to hear their whistle bugs pipe up at 6, and the first loads grumble down the road before dawn. But this logging in the middle of the night, it's a new one on me. The sharp bleats of the bug and the backup beeps, the bass thrum of the cables, and higher whine of the chokers, the diesel growl of the cutter loader, the scrape of the carriage, and when they buck, the urgent howl of chainsaws. The spotlights in the window, they make a mess of sleep, the all-night loggers do, out there working in the face-slapping rain, the limb-whipping wind, the frigid fog. I shiver, pull the blanket higher, turn back into my ragged dreams. This poem is called For the Forests, and it's dedicated to Roger Dorband. You are our conscience, Roger. Your words, your photographs, thank you. And never pass over a letter of his in the Daily Yay, the best letters ever. And to Roger and to all the other forest conservationists, especially the young. Gazing over the river now at the hills of Willapa, or from the other side toward Clatsop, what you mostly see is absence of what was there before. The trees, the giant trees, the many trees, the greatest green trees this lovely, lonely land or any other has ever known. We needn't ask when they all went or why. We know these things, and we, or our forebears, were part of it, with our appetites, desires, needs, and greed. But what comes next, and what will we leave? These questions we may ask. These we must when gazing across the Columbia now. Yes, the old growth's long gone now. But when I came to Willapa, these 45 years past, the second growth was well along, self-sown, unplanted, unsprayed, full of returning life like encetina and torrent salamanders, wintergreen and bunchberry, queen's cup and wood sorrel, warblers and woodpeckers, crossbills and grouse, the owls. But then came the change-ups, the sellouts, unions out, profits up, mill jobs traded for log exports, rotations down from 75 years to 30. Those woods were good for jobs and logs and habitat for 50 years. But they all went down in 15. Someone thought the profit worth the cost. So now we face these skinned and bitter hills and ask, what's next? For every twig and tree we save will be tomorrow's hope and prayer. Thank you all so much.
That was Dr. Robert Michael Pyle, the final speaker in the Leap Day Forest Poets event in Astoria. Earlier, we heard readings from poets Reba Owen, Jim Dott, Lauren Mallett, and Logan Garner. This has been The Human Beat. I'm Roger Ruckett.